A new suite of 6 actively managed ETFs is here, powered by Capital Group and everything behind it. Explore what's behind our new active ETFs at capitalgroup.com/ETFs. American Funds Distributors, Inc., member FINRA.
This is your tech news briefing for Monday, May 2nd. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We've seen from Ukraine how technology has made it a lot easier to see what's going on in a war zone. Anyone with a smartphone can take a picture or shoot a video and upload it for the world to see. But when it comes to using this information later, say as part of a war crimes investigation, how do we ensure that it's real, accurate, and who should be doing the verifying? On today's show, our reporter Ian Lovett joins us to discuss the evidence coming out of Ukraine, the volunteers combing through it, and how they're using tech to verify it. That's after these headlines. A swath of southern Ukraine occupied by Russia lost internet and cell phone service over the weekend. The Ukrainian government attributed the outage to Russian attacks. Representatives for multiple Ukrainian network operators confirmed that the area's 3 top cell phone carriers could no longer reach customers in the affected regions. In some occupied territories of Ukraine, Russian-backed network operators have replaced domestic ones. The network security firm Adaptive Mobile Security says customers using those networks, which aren't recognized by Ukrainian regulators, generally can't communicate with phone numbers outside of their local service areas and Russia. The FBI performed potentially millions of searches of Americans' electronic data last year, without warrants. That's according to a federal report published last week. This is the first time an intelligence agency has published an accounting of FBI data grabs under a controversial section of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that was put into effect after 9/11. FBI officials say more than half of the reported searches, nearly 2 million, were related to an investigation into a national security threat involving attempts by alleged Russian hackers to break into critical infrastructure. The report doesn't allege that the FBI was routinely searching for American data improperly or illegally, but the disclosure is likely to stoke long-standing concerns in Congress about how the government collects and views Americans' data. Elon Musk sold about $8.5 billion worth of his Tesla stock in the 3 days after agreeing to buy Twitter for $44 billion. That's according to regulatory filings revealed last week. Musk needs to come up with $21 billion in cash to finance the Twitter deal. Other financing for the deal is coming from bank loans. Musk is Tesla's largest shareholder, owning around 17% of the company before last week's sale, according to FactSet. Last week, Apple opened up an online store that allows customers and independent repair shops to get parts and manuals for their Apple products. The iPhone maker's been known for its tight control over the repair process, but the company's getting ahead of possible federal right-to-repair legislation, which we've covered on the show before. Just don't expect to save much money doing the repairs yourself. According to our reporting, buying parts to fix an iPhone 12 mini, for example, would only cost $3 less than having an out-of-warranty device fixed at an Apple store. And looking for friends in all the wrong places? Well, if you're looking on the Scrabble-style online game Words with Friends, you might be. Many players have recently learned that some of their regular opponents are really software, known as bots. The game's publisher, Zynga, says it introduced bots in 2019 to ensure users could always find a suitable opponent. And this practice is actually fairly common. The app analytics firm Sensor Tower says 7 of the 10 most popular mobile games use software programs designed as people. Our tech reporter Sarah Needleman spoke with Paul Bettner, who created Words with Friends, and he believes bots in games are here to stay.
Bots weren't originally in the game, but he does think they're a clever solution to this problem of not having a real-life opponent immediately available. And he said that with the coming of the metaverse, we ought to get used to interacting with artificial intelligence. And so maybe a little bit of a shock to the system at first, but this may be an indication of where we are headed in the future as we spend more time online with a more immersive technology than what we have today.
All right, coming up, anyone with a smartphone can capture the brutality of a war. But can tech help ensure those images can be used in future prosecutions? We'll discuss after the break.
Analyzing news events involves many moving pieces. But whether you're analyzing politics or data points, accountability is key for doing great work. Monday.com keeps the entire organization on the same page in real time. Everyone knows who's responsible for what, when things are due, and how much progress has been made, so you know who to turn to in a moment of crisis or celebration. Leave your limits behind and discover what you can accomplish with Monday.com. To start your free 14-day trial, go to Monday.com/podcast.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine has generated a lot of troubling images of destruction. Prosecutors and international organizations are looking to build a body of evidence for potential war crimes trials. And to do so, they're turning to videos and pictures shared online on places like Telegram, TikTok, and Facebook. But how do you prove those images from unverified sources are accurate and admissible in court? Joining us to discuss this is WSJ reporter Ian Lovett. Hi, Ian. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me, are there more open source videos and photos from this war than previous ones?
So there are not yet more open source videos total than there were in any previous wars. Syria was really when we started to see open sources playing a big role in people's understanding of a conflict around the world. You know, millions and millions of photos and videos and pieces of evidence came out of Syria. But what everyone I've talked to who works in the space says is that this kind of evidence is coming out of Ukraine at a far, far faster rate than it has in any previous conflict. So there's a nonprofit based in Berlin called Mnemonic, which specializes in collecting and archiving digital evidence of war crimes. They started doing that in Syria. And in, you know, 7 or 8 years of conflict there that they were doing this, they collected about 1.7 million videos. And already in just 8 weeks in Ukraine, they have 500,000 videos. So that is one measure of the rate that this stuff is being produced in Ukraine versus in previous wars.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about how they are verifying this information. Are there certain things that they're looking for to make sure it's reliable and maybe admissible in court later?
So first off, in terms of verifying it, it's pretty simple. They look for basically context clues in the photos and videos to make sure that they are the places that they purport to be. So if this is in, let's say, Kharkiv, then they'll look at the video and then they'll go on to satellite images of Kharkiv, geolocated photos on the internet of Kharkiv, and try to make sure they're seeing some of the same things in the background in those photos that they see in the video. They'll do things like run reverse Google image searches to make sure this isn't content that's been posted online beforehand. And look for, they have other sort of technical things to look for to see if the video has been doctored. Places like Bellingcat that have really pioneered this open source investigations do not reach out and try to find the owner of the photo. They feel like that actually kind of taints their investigation. So they are doing everything with publicly available information. There's much more publicly available information than there ever has been in the past. It, you know, anybody can now download very high quality satellite images almost in real time. In terms of it being admissible in court, that is a much more open question. It has come up in some national courts in various countries with mixed results. It's been admissible in some cases and tossed out in others. Partly, it's been tossed out in some cases because of a non-standardized method of collection. And so there are now people who are creating protocols. There's one called the Berkeley Protocol, which has been endorsed by the UN. Bellingcat has its own methodology to try to make sure everything is done in a standardized way, that every search is being done the same way so that the search results are not biased, that the photos or videos are being downloaded in the same way and stored in the same way. And they hope that that makes it more likely that a judge will accept this evidence.
But given how much information is out there, I mean, is there any tech that can help people kind of sort through this and get that information? Or is this just kind of, you know, by hand, sort of in air quotes there, that they're going through and looking to verify this?
A lot of it remains by hand at this point. Mnemonic, this nonprofit in Berlin that specializes in this, developed an AI tool that helps them sort videos in Syria. So they can search specifically, for example, for videos that show cluster munitions, and then it will bring them just those videos and sort them for relevance. But in terms of the actual, like, finding videos online and downloading them to be saved in the first place, that's all a manual task still at this point. There are other ways in terms of war crime investigations that AI is helping. There's facial recognition software that's helping, you know, if there's a video of a Russian soldier captured on CCTV, they can run that through facial recognition software, which will then find instances of that person or someone who looks like that person on the internet, which can help them, you know, find social media accounts and potentially track down the right person. But in terms of just finding the videos in the first place, that's still a manual task.
Okay, you've mentioned a few nonprofits and some of the groups that are working on these protocols and gathering some of this information. But I mean, really, who is behind collecting these massive amounts of data and then categorizing them?
So it is effectively a volunteer effort. There are some professionals, you know, Bellingcat, which is an organization that's devoted to open source investigations based in the Netherlands. They have a handful of investigators. Some other nonprofits based in Ukraine or in big international nonprofits, Amnesty International, for example, have, you know, handfuls of investigators as well. But mostly these are teams of volunteers, some of whom do this full-time, some of whom do this in off hours between, you know, their other jobs, who are combing through social media sites like Telegram that are popular in Ukraine and just looking for any images that look like they might show attacks on civilians or use of banned weapons or anything like that, and then sending them to the people who are archiving them. And that actually, the fact that it's so volunteer-based has been a cause of concern for people who are interested in trying to make sure it's admissible in court, because these volunteers are much less likely than, say, the Bellingcat staff members to kind of follow one of these strict protocols.
Is the Ukrainian government taking any steps to ensure that this data is collected and potentially useful for them going forward?
So the Ukrainian prosecutors are definitely interested in this. I talked to a prosecutor in Kyiv who said that they have been taking trainings on dealing with open source data. But for the most part, their attitude for now remains that they want to try to track down the owner of the photo or the video if they're interested in using it in court. And so they are still spending a great deal of effort doing that. I spoke to nonprofits who've been on conference calls with the ICC, and the ICC asked them to do the same thing when they were finding useful open source data, which is they wanted to track down the owner of the video rather than just saving the video from online.
What about big tech companies? Are they doing anything to help with these efforts?
So for the most part, not a ton. We asked Meta, which owns Facebook and Instagram, what they were doing to preserve videos that could show war crimes that were taken down because they violated rules about showing graphic violence or something like that. They told us, you know, that they have policies where governments can ask for content, but they didn't address directly the Ukraine situation. Microsoft has some AI technology to help detect explosions that they have used in Syria, and they've said that some of their AI technology that's designed for humanitarian purposes is being used in Ukraine, but they have not given me details about exactly how.
Big picture, will these efforts set any precedents that might be used in the future?
Certainly, we're going to see open source data being used in court more and more often. I think that's very clear. It's played a huge role in, I think, the public's understanding of the war in Ukraine, more so than any other war, even Syria up to this point. And in a lot of cases, it's just not possible to track down the owners of the videos. The people post them online anonymously because they're afraid of being associated as a witness to some of these events. And so that will come up, I think, more and more frequently. And we're just going to have to see which courts allow it under what circumstances.
All right. That was our reporter, Ian Lovett. Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
I asked what kind of family she wanted. She said, a family like yours.
Learn more about adopting a teen at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.